Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Don't forget all the other things you can do there at Small Business Heaven, at which also is known as jbsba.com or smallbusinessadvocate.com or jimblasingame.com. Gary Moore is our guest. He's all over our website, archives and articles and lots of different places you can find Gary on our website. Gary is a former senior vice president of investments at Payne Weber before he founded his own firm, which is the firm where he counsels to ethical and spiritual investors. He's the author of a couple of my favorite books, Spiritual Investments, Wall Street Wisdom from the Career of Sir John Templeton, and his new book, Faithful Finances 101. Gary Moore, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Doing great. It's good to have you back.
Good to be back, Jim.
Gary,
so fun.
By the way, can you give us a report on Sir John? How's he doing?
Sir John's aging, of course. He's 93. He's still brilliant. Sir John has problems with his memory, which causes him some concern, and so he's slowing down.
Yeah.
But he is still as brilliant as he can be, in my view. He's still making good investment decisions, wise investment decisions, and still providing invaluable guidance to the foundation. So,
what are some things we could still learn from Sir John Templeton in the 21st century?
Jim, I had to take the rest of the hour, but I think the big thing is maybe today, his sense of ethics. What we're seeing with John, let me give you an anecdote. John's been concerned for a long time that his alma mater, Yale, did not believe you could teach business and ethics. Just after Enron, Yale asked a friend of mine, David Miller, to come and run the Center for Faith and Culture, which could literally be called the Morality and Business Program. And he's on campus at Yale now, and things are changing, Jim. I have college and seminary presidents coming to see me about using some of our materials. Even the Faithful Finances book that I told you about the other day has now been put in the curriculum at some colleges.
Congratulations.
It's an amazing thing, and I couldn't get in to see these guys before Enron.
Five years ago, the world.
BE and AE for
well, you were, you know, you were telling me this on the show, you, and when our visits over the last when you first started joining us 4 or 5 years ago, I remember you saying, you know, that people aren't interested in this kind of thing, but now they are.
Oh, it's just all the difference in the world, and one of the reasons to be specifically religious as opposed to morality. You know, the New York Times Group did an article about the CEOs of the major corporate implosions were all devoted churchgoers. Yeah. Bernie Ebers, they tell me, taught Sunday school in a Southern Baptist church every Sunday, and
right. He
was convicted on all accounts. And part
the
of the reason
the WorkCom
that
CEO, the WorkCom founder and CEO.
Yeah, we just haven't learned to integrate what we believe on Sunday as fairness and justice and so on with the way we live our lives, and especially in a corporate arena. And the church doesn't talk about it. I'm not being critical, but the church has been of no help to people in that regard, and that's what the church is beginning to see. Is that to be relevant, they have to talk about some of the subjects that you and I have discussed over the years on the show.
Well, another thing, do you get the idea that some of these people at these high levels are so far off of where the rubber meets the road that they just don't get they don't make the connection that the decisions that they make are almost abstract decisions. They're not actually real world decisions. You know, when a small business owner makes a decision to do something and it's an ethical decision, they actually can see the faces of the people that is affecting.
Oh, yeah.
They know where they live. They know what their children look like.
Yeah.
But when you get to some of these levels, they're so far. They're not even one off. They're like 10 off of where the thing is going to manifest itself?
A lot of that actually is due to our educational system, Jim. If you think about it, as you go through life, you begin in the grade school with a general worldview, and as you go higher and higher until you get your PhD, what you do is you have greater and greater depth of knowledge about a narrower and narrower subject. And if you're spending all of your time, let's say, in a PhD in international economics or political science, you're probably not taking courses in economics, personal finance, and so on. So there ends up, to use your word, connections. I use that a lot. There just aren't connections in the way we conduct our affairs.
Right. Stand by, Gary. Thank you for that little tour of what's going on these days in the ethical arena of the marketplace. And we all wish Sir John Templeton the best. When we come back, we're going to talk about Social Security reform. I'm going to ask Gary Moore if he's for it or against it.
Nothing can stop a Duke of Earth.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a good visit with our good friend Gary Moore, the author of Faithful Finances 101. And Gary, give us your website, please.
Financialseminary.org.
All right. And they can find out more about the book there?
Absolutely.
And the book's available wherever books are sold. I know that.
Yeah, and they have it on Amazon.
Right. Yep. Gary Moore, ladies and gentlemen, with two O's. Gary, as you know, one of the hottest debates going on right now is what should we do with Social Security?
Sure.
Should we reform it? Is it okay? If you listen to one side, it's not as bad as everybody says, and we just need to leave it alone. Don't fix it because it's not broken. On the other side, there are people who are they're saying, you know what, this thing is doomed. We can actually see the date, not that far in the future, when this thing is going to collapse. If we don't do something about it, if we don't get it reorganized and redirected and refunded, we got a nightmare scenario waiting to happen. Gary, what's the truth?
The truth, Jim, is that we cannot save wealth for my retirement. I mean, begin with that understanding.
Why? What do you mean by that?
We just can't. The food and medicines and so on that we're going to need 20 years from now, let's say you and I retire late, we cannot save for that. What we can do is put money into things that can grow to produce that. It's like planting trees.
So you're saying we can't save for our retirement, but we can't invest for our retirement. Is that what you're saying?
Okay, let's take a kernel of corn that I want to eat 20 years from now. We can't save that. Now, what we can, a corn's a bad idea. Let's use a nut or an apple. We can plant apple trees, in other words, okay, that my son will pick and harvest and take care of me. So you begin with that. We're making investment. Now, the real philosophical debate is, are we better off to invest in private enterprise or are we better off to invest in government? For example, during the 80s, Jim, I was not one of those people who doom and gloomed about the federal debt.
Right.
The reason was, as I understood, that we were spending the Soviet Union into oblivion as somebody who sort of sees the inside of economics and politics. And I thought that was a wise use of America's credit card, just like after World War II, when the Greatest Generation bought war bonds, I thought it was patriotic to finance Reagan's war against the Soviet, the communist bloc.
Right.
And I think that has made sense in the long run. Now, the question today is, of course, what the government in essence saying is if you give us the money, okay, the savings money, we can do increased health care and so on and so on for people. And business is saying, well, if you give us the money, we'll create markets around the world, products and so on and so on. And it's basically philosophical as to who is going to make the wisest investments going forward for the baby boomers who are about to retire. Because they're just like in the bank. There is no money in the bank, Jim. People, mm-hmm. they've got a piece of paper that says we have credits, but there's no money there.
Tell us why there's no money there.
Well, because they lend it out.
Who did they lend it to?
your local banker. When you put money in it, then people come in and they get a
mortgage. Are you saying that the $2 trillion IOU, and I think that's how much it is, that is owed to the Social Security fund, the trust fund, that the marketplace has seen that money? I thought the government borrowed that money.
Oh, the government did. That's
and
what
I thought politicians spent that. I didn't know that they loaned it to the marketplace.
No. That's what I was going to say. I'm talking about the banks right now. I'm using the bank as an analogy to Social Security.
Right.
Where the bank will lend it to private enterprise, Social Security has loaned it to the government to do various things. Exactly. But there is
either
the bank or the Social Security fund.
Right. So when the bank loans money, typically it's doing something productive. When the government borrows money and uses it, it's doing something that may be useful, but it probably isn't productive.
Well, it could be productive. It's government does less productive. Let me give you an example. One productive of things it does, you know, is right outside my home. There's I-75 runs down the west coast of Florida. Okay, now that isn't a productive use because it opened up for development all of this. So I make the case, as opposed to some of my libertarian friends, and you get kind of marginally there sometimes, Jim, but government can do good things. And, for example, the space program invented the microwave, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It can. It's just that's not government's primary purpose. Primary purpose of government is to govern and transfer wealth in the welfare system. And that generally does not produce wealth. That generally consumes wealth, of course, and that's what concerns us. But I think privatization is coming, Jim, as we grow more. Always remember, though, when I see the one thing I wish people wouldn't do on our side, Republican side, and remind the viewers I was an advisor to Jack Kemp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a lifelong Republican. But sometimes it's a little bit unfair to say that Social Security has not matched the return on investments because Social Security was originally an insurance system. In other words, it's more fair to compare Social Security to an insurance policy than to a mutual fund.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it a little better. And
I don't know if I agree with that. And the reason I'm not sure, Gary, is because it's more of an annuity than an insurance policy. Because if I die, nobody else gets that money. And one of the great tragedies I think in this system is that the average black male gets a negative return on his money for Social Security. We need to take a quick break, Gary. When we come back, folks, I'm going to put the Democrats and the Republicans at Gary Moore's knee, and they're going to ask him, Gary, what should we do? We'll do whatever you say. We're going to get Gary to tell us what that should look like with Social Security right after these messages. And by the way, the Democrats and the Republicans are listening. 10 till. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and visiting with our good friend Gary Moore, and his newest book is called Faithful Finances 101. It's getting a new surge of interest because Gary was a prophet, and he saw this coming. He saw the need for these kinds of perspectives on what we're doing, the need that we were going to have to get back to where we could trust the marketplace, and you wrote about it, Gary, and so your prophecies have paid off, and I congratulate you on the interest that people are showing in your book now.
Thank you, Jim. It was just a little bit too early, but at least people are paying attention now.
Well, I think they are, and I'm glad they are, and I'm glad it's you that is helping them. Gary, okay, the Democrats and the Republicans, I have them assembled. They're at your knee. and they're looking up at you wide-eyed, and they're saying, Gary, please tell us what to do. We want to know about what to do with Social Security. And whatever you tell us to do, that's what we'll do. All right, Gary, the world is at your feet.
Okay.
What would you do?
The first thing is to understand that the most important fact in all of this, Jim, as we were discussing at the break, is to maintain confidence in the system. General Motors pension plan, as you know, is shaky. If people lose confidence, all of capitalism is built on trust and confidence, Jim. Everything's a Ponzi scheme in this world in one way or another, built on trust and confidence. one of the problems of a bipolar debate here is that if people lose confidence in the system, and it's already fragile right now, Jim, then we're going to lose a lot more than a political battle. So we need to keep the big picture and the common interest in mind. The second thing we need to understand is that Social Security is not a crisis. It's a problem, Jim. It can be resolved, and it'll be resolved by either, one, some privatization, two, some borrowing of money, three, some printing of money, the monetization and so on, and maybe some benefit cuts. Maybe the government has promised too much, just as the General Motors pension plan did.
And one way to cut benefits would be to adjust the retirement ages.
It will, and to me...
They've already done that.
Jim, I think, I mean, personally, because of my understanding that there is really nothing there, that whatever I get is going to come from my son.
From somebody, exactly. It's going to come
just
from your
like
son,
mine
and mine's
going to
come from mine.
To my mother.
Right.
Then if I get Social Security, I thoroughly intend to give it to my son to make a payment. Now, not everyone's affluent enough to do that, and I'm not throwing a guilt trip on. But people of means should understand that we are, in essence, probably going to live a little bit beyond our means, all of us. And if we can help the next generation by, in essence, easing their future obligations, then we can do that personally. That is something we can do on an individual level to help with the problem.
Now, you mentioned investment. What would your investment component look like?
That's the most important part, Jim. Warren Buffett just issued his annual letter, and for the third year in a row, I think, he's sitting on $45 billion of cash because he can't find anything to buy. What I'm saying, and you know, Sir John is saying the same thing, is if we simply use all of this money, if we privatize part of it or all of it, and we simply use it to further inflate the value of our stocks, it's not going to do the country that much good, Jim. Okay, it'll do the people who have stocks and stuff. I believe that money should go to a pool, and perhaps it's managed by Wall Street or banks and so on, where it helps the small business owner who today, you know, could use some additional capital, and to develop the third world and the developing world so that there are more people who will utilize my son's products.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that if we do both of those, then the privatization would be good. Now, let me also say, you know, there are some people that think this through. If we privatize and everybody who fearfully, this is where the confidence and trust comes in, fearfully like we did in the 90s, Pat Robertson wrote a book one time that said until the federal debt is paid off, you should invest only in Treasury securities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if people take that approach due to a lack of confidence, what has changed? We're just buying Treasury securities through private accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing has really changed. Everything's still going to the government. So it's crucial we maintain confidence and trust in this political debate and solve the problem by tweaking. Probably a minor tweaking of the four areas I mentioned would probably solve Social
Should we security. We should be moving toward individual accounts, real accounts, not just one huge fund and it's a single payer kind of a thing.
Yeah, I think we should today. I wouldn't have wanted, let me qualify that.
I'm sorry, Gary, we've got to go, but something that people can also hand off to their families.
Absolutely.
That. Yeah, that's a key thing, I think. And that's a long-term thing for our nation. Thank you, Gary, for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next time.
Take care, Jim. Always
Gary
good.
Moore, ladies and gentlemen. Quick break. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.